the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
Yeah, I mean, when Steve was, it was when it was still the Terry, Bill, and Steve show, we were wallowing in 7th or 8th place, but I mean, we've been, I think, three books now that we've been in number 2 behind. I mean, it's now radio with Crash and Mars is double what everybody's got in the morning. I don't know why. It's such an awful radio show, but we climbed our way back to number 2, so to be able to do that after 30 years in this market, and especially after the critics or so-called critics or so-called experts that are I keep hearing rear their ugly heads or faces or whatever on Puget Sound Radio from time to time, telling me that I'm a hack and a has-been, and nobody understands why I'm still even doing radio.
This is the Sound Off Podcast with Matt Kundel. Broadcast talk in Sound Off mode.
Thanks for downloading this podcast to your phone and letting us take up a little space between your ears. We are live to a hard drive with the podcast about broadcast. Today, we are speaking with Terry Evans, longtime Edmonton broadcaster, who has lived at 97.3, save for the 5 years he was at 100.3 The Bear. Also, Randy Renaud, who works at Showman Montreal, is back with another radio series. This time, it's Myths and Legends. You'll hear how a great story can be told with excellent writing and a great producer. The Sound Off Podcast is brought to you by OvernightRadio.com. Doesn't matter if you're a radio station, media group, or advertising agency, OvernightRadio.com creates commercial voiceovers, radio commercial production, and even radio jingles. They deliver high-end commercial productions for stations and companies at budget-friendly prices. Put their experience and low rates to work for you. Call or email them today, OvernightRadio.com, since 1998.
We call this Things to Blame on Kundel. Parts of life that have inexplicably gone wrong that require blame to be assigned. It even has its own hashtag. Go ahead, look it up. Hashtag Things to Blame on Kundel.
In the days after the U.S. election, we are stuck with the aftermath of why Donald Trump is now President of the United States. I certainly don't want to clutter up this podcast with political talk, but you can certainly add the hashtag Things to Blame on Kundel. I believe the profound disappointment that everybody feels is really about media and pollsters and journalism and how it all failed us for the last couple of years. This podcast was born out of the digital revolution, and I want you to listen to these profound words by Van Jones on CNN the night of the election and how this isn't the first time technology has had an effect on the political process.
When there is a revolution in media, when there's a new media form, a new master usually comes along and shocks everybody. Radio with FDR. People totally wrote FDR off, and then he understood radio better than everybody else, and he broke through. JFK, totally written off, but he understood television better than everybody else, and he broke through. Obama, totally written off, but he understood the internet, you know, that you could raise money, you know, small donation dollars, viral videos, and he was able to break through. Donald Trump understands social media and reality television better than anybody else. And that's the era that we're in. And so things that you do in social media, like, you know, being outrageous, insulting people, doesn't get you fewer followers on social media. It gets you more.
If you are shocked and appalled by the results from the U.S. election, you are the problem. My latest blog about the election is up now at mattkundel.com.
Now, the Sound Off Podcast presents Remedial Media. Because there are segments of the broadcast industry that just need it.
Randy Renaud is a longtime broadcaster who you might remember from the Weather Network in the 1990s. He's been a part of rock radio in Montreal at Shome 97.7, doing great programs like the blues-based Black Cat Alley. He also had a 15-part commemorative piece on the history of Shome FM, which is on their SoundCloud page, which I believe is still in existence, despite all the efforts of the iHeartMedia app. Have a listen to an episode from Randy's new series called Myths and Legends. Great rock stories, written well, and with fantastic production. Listen to how it's done.
Hello, children. Hello. Here is this morning's story.
These are the tabloid myths and campfire legends that make up the folklore of rock.
Are you ready?
Randy Renaud separates truth from fiction with the most outrageous tales in the history of rock.
Then we'll begin.
These are Shom's Myths and Legends of Rock.
Dateline, the summer of 1977, when members of the rock band Aerosmith have a premonition which may have saved their lives from a fatal plane crash.
Despite massive substance abuse and the odd tumble off the stage, Aerosmith are true rock and roll survivors, with all five original band members still alive and active. But has it been fate, good luck, or omens of looming danger that has allowed them to make it through 46 years of the perilous rock and roll lifestyle? Guitarist Joe Perry believes guardian angels have been watching over them because in 1977, when the band was shopping for a new private plane to charter for their upcoming tour, destiny intervened. Aerosmith had their hearts set on a 40-passenger, twin-engine Convair plane operated out of Texas. The very same plane that 3 months later, on October 20th, 1977, crashed in a Mississippi swamp, killing three members of the band, Lynyrd Skynyrd. The crash happened just 3 days after the release of Lynyrd Skynyrd's album Street Survivors, whose cover eerily depicted the band members engulfed in flames. Backup singer Casey Gaines was initially fearful and refused to board the plane, offering instead to ride in the band's equipment truck. But lead singer Ronnie Van Zant convinced her otherwise. She also died. And this bird you cannot change. But what about Aerosmith? Did they have a similar portent of danger? Well, nothing so mystical, it seems. One of Aerosmith's tour assistants, a man named Harold Bucher, had gone and inspected the plane beforehand and reported back that both the plane and the crew operating it looked unreliable. Bucher reported seeing the pilots passing around a bottle of Jack Daniels while he was there. And by the way, Aerosmith's 1997 album, Nine Lives, ended up being dedicated to Harold Bucher.
From exploding drummers to conspiracy theories, these are Shom's Myths and Legends of Rock.
Shom 97.7.
By the way, if you would like to have that series run on your radio station, you can contact me and I'll put you in touch with Randy. Matt Kundle Media does not profit from the sale or redistribution of this great radio feature.
Imaging and production for radio made easy from Megatrax Production Music. Add a sense of British flair to your productions with London's No Sheet Music. From the team behind Wise Buddha, No Sheet Music are musicians and music fans. It's as simple as that. Their albums range from contemporary to classical, orchestral to electronic, and they're always usable and sonically excellent. Don't miss the hottest sounds by adding Deep East music to your deal. Music from Deep East elevates a story and amplifies a message with a serious buzz. Always fresh and intuitive, and of course, the highest quality, they've always got their ears to the ground for the latest worldwide trends. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
Terry Evans has been working in radio in Edmonton for 36 years. He has four tours of duty to speak of. His initial arrival in 1980, his departure for the Bear in 1992, his subsequent firing from the Bear in 1997, which brought him back to K97. His departure for personal reasons in 2006, only to return a year later. When you think about it, his career is like working in Edmonton four times, for 9 years at a time. I had a chance to work with Terry, 3 years with him and four against him. I learned greatly from both. You don't really get to know him until you remove radio from the equation. Well, go ahead, ask his program directors. You'll get a different story from each that will lead you feeling like Lieutenant Gerard from The Fugitive, each description not really matching up against the last. Truth be told, Terry is less enthusiastic talking about himself, but comes to life talking about other people. Whether that's his loyal listeners, his co-workers like Bill Cowan and Bryn Griffiths, also producer Scotty Ballantyne, or his children Riley and Kate, who are, well, not really children anymore, they're 18 and 16. If you want to get to know Terry for who he really is, don't talk about radio. Talk about life. We have not spoken since probably since I left Edmonton. Have we spoken since then?
I think we talked a couple times on the phone.
We did.
I know we've messaged back and forth on Facebook and stuff, but we haven't been chummy. That's for sure.
That's a byproduct of being in radio and being a workaholic. Is that, you know, your work becomes your friends, and that's your life.
Yeah.
Your first radio job, I believe it was in BC.
So much as I can recall, my first radio job was when I walked up to a radio station in my hometown, Creston, BC. If I remember correctly, I was in grade 10. So I would have at the time been 14 years old, and then I got the job in 1980, I think January 23rd, 1980 was the first time I was on the air at KC Radio in Creston, BC, which was in a little house just above the hospital. And they converted all the bedrooms and whatnot into offices and studios. There was a voicing, like a production studio, and another bedroom was a news studio, and the other bedroom was a main control room that looked right out onto the street. I don't remember the name of the street, but I just remember Creston Valley General Hospital, or CVH. Creston Valley Hospital was right there beside us. So there I was in grade 10 doing my own radio show from 6 till midnight after sitting in with Chris Kelly on his morning show for about a month leading up to Christmas.
Which brings me, I guess, to, like, you went from Lethbridge, and then is that where you went to K97 after that?
Yeah, I went from Creston. I graduated from high school in Creston, and then I went to Lethbridge to go to Lethbridge Community College. And because I had worked at a radio station prior to going to college, I was the only first year allowed on the college radio station. My first shift there, I made a tape and found out that Murray Redman, who was second year at the college and also working part-time at LA 107, he had taken a job in Brandon. So he came down and announced that to everybody, and everybody said, "Oh, I got to get a tape in." So I did my first college radio show and called myself Johnny Rogers and took it into Jim Duffin. And he said, "Do you golf?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Okay, be here Thursday at midnight." He goes, "Oh, by the way, Johnny Rogers sounds too much like a pirate." He goes, what's your last name?" I said, "Chernoff." And he goes, "Oh, that sounds like shit. Sounds like turn off the radio." He goes, "Pick something else." And I said, "How about Evans?" He goes, "Perfect."
And what about the moment when you got hired at K97?
I bugged Neil Edwards for months to, it was basically a transfer, if I remember correctly, because I think LA 107 in Lethbridge and K97 at the time were owned by the same company, Selkirk. Or maybe that ownership change happened at a later date. I'm not sure, but it seemed to me like just a straight transfer. And when Neil hired me, it was, I was going from Lethbridge to Edmonton. It was, I was going to work with Phillips and Allen and Ray Grover and Rob Brown and some of the other people that were in the market at the time were just, you know, Canadian radio phenoms that I thought, wow, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to be able to learn so much. And that was true.
In the early 90s, you got an opportunity to cross the street and go work at 100.3 The Bear. Why'd you make that move?
Well, there had been a series of changes at K97. The program director and I did not get along at the time. I basically found out through Marty Forbes what was transpiring with Standard coming in with the Bear. And there had been some discussions between me and my program director where I kind of figured that it might be a good idea to be proactive rather than reactive. And I was basically told, what the hell did I know? And I didn't take kindly to that. So I just figured it was time for a change. So I contacted Marty, and then he put me on to Eric Samuels. I threw a tape over there, and there was one bit on that tape that I did that convinced Eric Samuels to hire me, which I'm forever grateful for. So I went over there and did middays, and then eventually mornings, and then afternoons, and then mornings again before 5 years was up, and then Greg Diamond fired me.
This is the part of the interview where we're going to move into, it's a miserable part of the interview for you, Terry, and we're going to start talking about program directors. Let's talk about Eric Samuels a sec, and just a couple words on each one of these guys. So Eric Samuels.
Well, Eric Samuels basically saved my career, because prior to the Bear, I was thinking about getting out of radio, getting into real estate. Actually, there was one other guy too. He wasn't a program director at the time, and you might be able to help me. He's since passed away. What the hell was his name? He worked at Mix 96. Heavyset guy with glasses.
Gord Robson.
Yeah, Gord Robson. I was sitting in Ray's Restaurant and Saloon, and Gord Robson was sitting there beside me just by chance. And I mean, Gord Robson, how many places has he worked? He's been in Vancouver. He's been all over the place. You know, he was a guy that I respected, even though we didn't work at the same radio station. And at that time, the competition between radio stations, you didn't talk to each other or anything like that. The last thing you would want to do is get caught hanging out. But Gord Robson, I respected a great deal. And he told me something that I'll never forget. It was that he had never heard anybody on the radio that had the relationship with the listeners that he had heard with me and my Edmonton listeners. And I just thought that was really something for him to say, being one of those competition guys. And it just kind of changed the way I thought about progressing with my career. And then when I got the opportunity to work at the Bear and with Eric Samuels, the thing that Eric Samuels did for me in basically saving my career was he took the time to get to know me and work with what he had rather than trying to change what he didn't like. And I may have been very difficult to work with at the time. I may have been easy. I have no idea. You'd have to ask him. But I'll be forever grateful for Eric Samuels for taking the time to get to know me. And we became very, very good friends. And I respect him greatly. So,
and can you contrast that to the time you worked with Steve Jones?
Well, Steve Jones carried on from there. And I still work with Steve Jones. I saw Steve Jones today. They're doing budget meetings for NewCap at the station in the mall. So Steve Jones carried on from there. Steve and I hit it off quite famously, and he did basically the same thing that Eric Samuels did, and that's take the time to get to know me and get to know what he had rather than, you know, see things that maybe that were difficult to work with or a challenge. You know, he was able to kind of dig a trench and let the fire burn according to the trench instead of trying to run around a field and put it out. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely, it does. So is that also a formula for getting on with the various co-hosts that you've had over the years? Well, you've had Bill Cowan around with you for well over, you know, 10, 15 years now. So Does he treat you that same way? And is that the key to your success with him?
There's certainly a high degree of direction with the relationship. I mean, Bill and I were good friends. We were very good friends. before we worked together. I've known him for almost 30 years, almost since the day I moved to Edmonton, because I saw him doing stand-up comedy back in the day. And we formally met, I think it was at the Sawridge Hotel in Jasper on a ski trip when he was doing stand-up comedy. But, you know, Bill and I being friends, and then, I mean, he went off to Toronto to get into, like, he went to school for radio, and then ended up, I think he was working at Chum, and then he worked, but moved back here to work for A Channel. And that's when we started getting him to do some part-time news stuff. But with Bill, it's been a continuous learning curve for both of us. I think, you know, I think since Bill and I have started together, it's been a lot of learning on my part and a lot of directing on Bill's part. You know, Bill's got a lot to offer. He also has a very open mind when it comes to being able to be coached or learn and his desire to want to learn more too.
And your relationship with Steve Zimmerman?
Steve Zimmerman was the most spontaneously funny guy I have ever worked with, probably who I've ever met. When the chemistry was there, it was hard to beat, both at the Bear and at K97, where we had a pretty good run at number one. I think egos kind of ended up submarining us to a certain degree, nobody more than anyone else. It was just a collection of things and that came to fruition that I don't know if any one of us would have predicted, but I mean, being at the Bear and then being together at K97 and then having it all, you know, fall by the wayside and then having it start up again. So three different times we worked together. There was obvious reasons for management to put us together again. And there was, you know, the desire for it to happen, the want for the success and so on. But in the end, it came down to, you know, Steve quit 2.5 years ago. And it was a surprise to me. And that was the last time I spoke with him.
You left radio for a bit. And I believe you drove truck. What was that?
2006. Yeah, that was with that was when Rob Mize was the program director or operations manager, or I don't know what the hell he did there. I don't know if anybody did. But yeah, that was 2006. I was gone from K97 and decided to start something up that I'd never done before. Started a transport company with a Z71 pickup and a homemade boat trailer. And, did that for about 14 or 16 months. And then K97, Randy LeMay came back and asked me if I would come back to work at the radio station. So, yeah.
So while you're running the company, what'd you learn outside of radio?
Actually, I learned that I like having my own business. I got a real kick out of it. It was a huge departure, obviously, going from I didn't even push the buttons, so I didn't have a single callus on my hand except for my fingertips, maybe trying to learn how to play guitar, but I was never very good at that, so I didn't keep that up for very long. But it was hard work. It was self-made work. And it was out of necessity to a certain degree. And it was one of those things where I just kind of said to myself that I refuse to fail. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it as best I can. And it ended up working pretty good. I ended up having guys working for me. I had a couple of trucks, had an industrial lot and a warehouse, and that was all being ready to be built and stuff. Managed to put together a pretty cool little company in a short period of time before I went back to radio.
Talk a little bit about community service. And I know that's a loaded question because you've got so many years of it behind you. But can you talk about its value as a morning man?
Well, credit where credit is due. First, Marty Forbes is the guy that taught me how to do it and taught me the reasons to do it and taught me the necessity and how it relates to radio. And morning radio in particular. And I just think you can sit behind a microphone and talk into it all morning and hope that there are people listening. But when it comes right down to it, you have to go out and market yourself and get people to listen to you. And quite often it ends up being through doing community involved things, charity stuff and that sort of thing, making yourself available to causes and getting out and talking to people, seeing people in person. Because if you don't, if you just sit in the room for 4 hours a day and then go home and watch The Voice or Seinfeld or whatever the whole night, and you never get out and see anybody, then it's a pretty reclusive and sheltered life, and it doesn't give you an opportunity to go beyond your environment and see what else is out there. I've been very fortunate to be embraced by many community organizations that have have continued a long relationship with me, and I find that I get more and more out of it as we go. I get more and more personal relationships out of it as we go, and it ends up not being something that is a quasi demand of the job so much, but it's something that it ends up being enjoyable. And if it's an annual thing or a monthly thing, regardless, it ends up quite often being enjoyable because you end up forging relationships that you wouldn't otherwise get if you just sat there and stayed in the radio station. I mean, you think about it, if you're not out there telling people to listen to you, if you're just doing it on your radio station, then not everybody listens to radio stations, but there's an awful lot of people from all different walks of life, and they end up going to charity events or community events or car door openings, for that matter. And you got to talk to those people and let them know that you're a human being and you're approachable. And that's one of the things that I've been knocked with for the longest time because of my outward appearance and my alleged aloofness, if that's the word. And also my size has a little something to do with that too. It can be perceived as intimidating running into a guy that's 6'5" and looking like me.
Do you have a favorite community service moment, like one that stands out that's your favorite?
There was a little dude in a city not far from Edmonton that was suffering from a skin condition, and the government wouldn't care. Wouldn't cover the medical costs of his treatment. So I found out about that story, and I think they needed to raise, it was $2,500 or $3,500 or something like that. And we started a thing one morning, and the people who listened to the radio station, the Edmontonians, came together, and we raised over $40,000, if I remember correctly, in a morning to help this little dude with his medication. He had said some things to his mother that were very disturbing to hear from a child that had not even been 10 years old. He basically said that he didn't want to carry on looking the way he did, and he was very self-conscious at that age. They're so affected by what others see and how others react and that sort of thing. And that was a huge one. It really does change the person you are and the way you deal with everything in your community. And a lot of the things that you deal with in your own personal life, whether it be family or friends or just the way you sort of carry yourself for the rest of the day.
And how do you take care of yourself the rest of the day? How do you stay healthy? How do you stay happy? How do you stay fit?
Well, I'm not much of a fitness guy. I don't spend time at the gym or on a treadmill or anything like that. I've recently discovered some health products that are doing me a wonder of good for mental focus and mental health especially. But the biggest thing for me is trying to pace myself. I still do anywhere from 175 to 225 events away from the radio station per year, so I keep myself very busy with appearances and charity things and community organizations and that sort of thing. So I do what I can. I've been blessed with a phenomenal wife who has always I guess you would call it more of a traditional husband and wife sort of thing. My wife has always been the primary cook in our relationship and shopper. So she's always feeding us good food. My kids have grown up healthy and I'm still healthy. I don't have anything to complain about in that department. I just try to keep rested more than anything. And it's pretty difficult. I got one of these stupid Fitbit things now that tells me how many steps I've taken in a day. But I find the most interesting thing is it tells me my average amount of sleep over the course of the week. And I'm only getting about 5 or 6 hours a night. I always remember looking at Bruce Kenyon and seeing the way his eyelids kind of drooped a little bit. And that happens with anybody. I'm not picking on Bruce or by any stretch. I always remember seeing Bruce with his eyelids drooping. And then now I look in the mirror and I see mine are doing that a little bit. I don't know if I need to get a Rob Christie eyelid tuck or anything like that, but I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if Rob Christie has actually had an eyelid tuck or not.
What time do you get up every morning?
3:30.
And when you get to work, Scotty's there. He's your producer.
Scott Ballantyne is there. I don't know what I'd do without Scott. He has been a godsend and a work in progress all at the same time, because there's an obvious age gap there. Well, he's an interesting guy. He's a unique individual, and he's a very literal attention to detail kind of guy. In some ways, it helps a great deal, and other ways, it's a giant 2x4 in the spokes of the show. So, I don't know if I could still be doing what I'm doing without Scotty. The way he's developed, we continue to work together to make it so that he's, as a producer, it's a viable position. Because, I mean, let's face it, I respect him, the world, but I don't want to be the next Brian Hall. I don't want to be doing this when I'm 80 years old. I'm hoping that there's going to come a day where I'm going to be able to fade off and hang up the headphones. And I hope Scotty is one of those guys that is able to define his role and define his position at a radio station and make it so that he's invaluable and very, very difficult to replace.
Is there anything that you look at in a radio station now that, you know, compared to 25 years ago that you go, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, computer shit just baffles me a lot. I look at some people. I mean, well, you're one of those guys where you've embraced a lot of the new technology. I look at guys like Marty Forbes, who's, Marty's almost 85, and the way he's embracing technology and keeping up to date with it. And really, he's a pioneer in technology in radio for the advancement of what's happening. But I just can't get my head around it. The production aspect of everything back then, too. I remember at the old K97 back from 86 to 92, working with Sharkey. And when I was doing the All Request Nooner during the heyday of K97, or the first heyday of K97, it was all recorded on reel-to-reel quarter-inch tape, and I would edit it. I edited every phone call that I recorded back in the day, and I kind of miss those days, having a grease pencil and a razor blade. And at the end of the All Request Nooner, I would always have I would be up to my shins in edited tape, because you just keep working a phone call. You keep talking to the person who calls into the request show to, find something, to get a little gem, to get a jewel that's going to be in entertaining and possibly funny on the radio. I miss old timey radio to a certain degree, but at the same time, this whole podcast generation and the fact that you can do a radio show from just about anywhere, and the ISDN stuff and all of that stuff. I mean, it's fascinating, but I'll be honest. I figured I would either die or I wouldn't be in radio when all this new technology started hitting it.
Your show was one of the first ones to pick up Periscope and start messing around with that. So who was that? Scotty, who pushed you to do it?
Scotty found this thing, and I kind of got a kick out of it too. And I did actually embrace the video part of that, the Periscope thing. And actually, there was one before that. What was the thing before that?
Mercat.
Mercat, there you go. That's right. Yeah, we started with that one and then moved to Periscope. You know, one of the other things, too, you want to talk about guys that I've worked with before. Steve Jones was and still is a genius when it comes to radio and marketing and all of the things that go with programming and stuff like that. Because back in the early heyday of the Terry, Bill, and Steve show, we were the first to do an internet radio show. It was the Uncensored show, where we would do it for up to 59 minutes, because that was how long before something happened with the logger tape or whatever. I don't know how it all worked. And it was something that people could actually log on to in the infancy of the internet. And I think there were times where we had 7 to 8 people on the internet listening to us during that show.
That's outstanding.
Well, when you consider the year that it was, I mean, it was back, we had just moved. We were still on 99th Street in Edmonton. So we had moved out of downtown and down to 99th Street. I don't know, is that 2003 or 2002 or something, 2004?
Yeah, and then you went to the mall, I think, after that.
Yeah, from 99th Street, we went to the mall. Yeah. And if Al Anderson was here right now, I'd punch him right in the ear for going to that mall. God damn it, I hate that mall.
What's wrong with going to work at the mall every day?
Well, if you do afternoon drive and it's Christmas time, it takes you about 45 minutes to park. There, how's that? Or how about this? Darlene Check used to do our 6 to midnight show. That was the first thing I said to Al Anderson. I'm, you know, not too crazy about the security aspect of our evening announcer, Darlene Check, walking out those doors in the middle of the night. The first thing is I can't see outside, and I'd like to. Even on 99th Street, we couldn't see outside because the studio was on the internal workings of that strip mall. We had the chance to leave 99th Street. I think we got a chance to go to the CBC building on 75th Street, because they had left there and there was already studios and all that stuff. I don't know exactly what the details were on what the cost of the building was. I heard it was $1 million. And I thought, wow, that would be a pretty good deal. Why don't we just move into there? That would be good. We could all see outside. We'd have different floors for each of the radio stations for, I think it was Big Earl at the time, or 96X or Mix 96 or whatever the hell. I don't know. Some pretty awesome decisions were made there with that frequency. But we could have had CFCW, Mix 96, and K97. All or K-Rock at the time, I guess it was. There was another nightmare. But going to the mall has been a constant thorn for a lot of people. And I don't know. I've probably said more than I should, but hey.
Well, you know, you do get to broadcast in West Edmonton Mall. And it's, you're right, there's no windows. And it's not always convenient. We think it's convenient, and it's not.
I guess, you know, after being at the Bear, which had its own unique atmosphere, I think the people more so than the building made that atmosphere. When I remember back to, you know, the people that we worked with in that barn. Same with the old K97 downtown on 108th Street. There was a certain atmosphere in that building, and the people brought that building to life. I'm not saying that the people currently don't bring our building to life, but it is it's a cavernous, like people, when they walk past, they see the storefronts, which is the three studios, but it's so cavernous and goes back so far. And, it's just a kind of a peculiar atmosphere. So we do what we can to make it, fun and entertaining, but it's the mall.
You just touched on it, and that's the rebranding when it went to K-Rock, but the listener was still calling it K97. For how many years was that wrong?
Well, yeah, that's in 1979, K97 became the FM rock station, album stereo, album rock that it was. And then in 1997, it changed over to 97.3 K-Rock. It was 97.3 K-Rock for, what was it, 11 years? And for every day of those 11 years, people would call it K97. And then when we switched back to K97, I think it was in 2006 or whatever it was. I don't know. Nine, almost 10 years that we've been back being K97. And I don't go, I don't walk 20 yards without somebody saying, "Hey, K-Rock, right on." So, it's been a branding nightmare, but it hasn't been the worst one there is.
But you've always seemed to be a part of the station. And I think that's why they keep coming back to you. And they, what is it, three times now you've been hired by them?
Yeah, I worked, 86 to 92, 97 to 06, and then 2007 to present day.
My kids were all born in Edmonton. And yeah, we're going back to Alberta this weekend. One of them is playing in a squash tournament. And
cool.
I get that feeling every time I watch my son, but I want to know, what's it feel like when you watch your son drum? What's it been like over the years watching him grow?
I love watching kids do what they are amazing at. I don't care if it's your kid, my kid. I see kids doing amazing things all the time. And I was chastised about it a great deal on Facebook. Somebody, I was just talking about it on my show yesterday or the day before. Yeah, yesterday. And people started giving me a hard time every time I would post something about my kids. My daughter's a national level synchronized swimmer. And she finished grade 10 last year, got her driver's license, and then took Bronze Cross, Bronze Medallion, and became a lifeguard, a certified Canadian lifeguard at the age of 16. So I think my daughter is pretty amazing. My son went on tour to Sweden and Germany and Sweden again. He actually turned 18 on tour in Sweden with the band that he was with at the time. He's played over 400 professional gigs. And he's just going to be 19 years old coming up. He's played with everybody from Johnny Tornado to Carson Cole, Bobby Cameron, David Go-Go. He's co-written a song called Slow It Down on David Go-Go, with David Go-Go and his other bandmates there on Dave's Soulbender record that was nominated for a Juno. He did that when he was 13. I marvel at my kids and their ability to do things. I marvel at other people's kids and their ability to do things. But you ask specifically about watching my son drum. I can't get over how much he is all about the song, right? He's improved. We've been fortunate enough to send him to the Berklee Percussion Festival for a week at Boston's Berklee College of Music, Berklee School of Music. And then I sent him there for the 5-week program where he spent 5 weeks with people who were like-minded and all they wanted to do was play music. And he improved greatly. And he's, you know, he's played in bands that are, I just never would have guessed. He's, you know, he's performed with people I never would have imagined. He's become friends with people. I mean, Ray McGuire from Trooper, you know, Matt Minglewood, the guys from Street Heart, David Go-Go, you know, this Saturday, he's playing a gig at the Needle Vinyl Cafe. He's Mike Plume using my son's band, the Blues Puppy Trio, as his band. And I mean, Mike Plume has toured back and forth across Canada. The day my son was born, I went to the Sidetrack Cafe and walked up to Mike Plume after he finished his song and handed him a cigar and said, "It's a boy," because it was November 18th, 1997. And this weekend, my son is going to be playing a gig with Mike Plume. I think that's phenomenal. I think it speaks a lot to the dedication that my son has to his music and to his craft. And he's at the Grant McEwen University now in the music program going for his 4-year degree. I can't get enough watching him, if whether it's rehearsal or practice or performance. He's, and I'm gushing, I know, but I mean, Danielle Marie is a country artist. She's living out in the Vancouver area right now. She got Riley to chart her songs, and then they flew him out to Vancouver, and he rehearsed there for 3 days with her so that he could come back to Vegreville and play Vegfest and open for Corb Lund and Charlie Major. It was, for him to be at the age of 18, to be flown out to the West Coast to rehearse for, after learning their song and rehearse for an artist and then play a festival like that, I am absolutely thrilled every day with the progress that my son is making with his drumming. It just knocks me out.
When you get off work, do you listen to radio?
I do.
And what do you listen to?
I listen to local radio. I listen to satellite radio, and very rarely, but sometimes I will listen to internet radio. You know, I'm not one of those people that needs to know what's happening every minute of every day in the industry. I used to be like that back in my late 20s when, there was still job offers happening from, Santa Monica and Vancouver and Toronto and stuff like that. But once I settled down and got married and started having kids, the desire to uproot a family for career gain or personal gain was really took a backseat to making sure that my family was grounded. I had to move around a lot. You know, I was with a single mom for a long time, and we made a lot of moves. And even when my mom remarried, I didn't want my kids to go through that. We've moved a lot around the Edmonton area and uprooted the kids a bunch of times in that manner, but it's been pretty much staying in the Edmonton area. So
what are you going to do when you hang up the headphones? Because you did mention those words, hang up the headphones, earlier on. So you must have a vision of what you would do in the weeks or months after that.
I have a real crazy desire to travel to places other than Mexico. I've been pretty fortunate to go to Mexico a bunch of times, in Jamaica a bunch of times, but I've never been to Europe. You know, there's going to be a summer place here and then a lot of winter travel. I've never been to Europe. You know, I've never been to South America. I've never been to Australia. I have a real wanderlust that I never had before, because I really concentrated on establishing myself and my career in my 20s. I really concentrated on my family in my 30s. And in my 40s, there was a lot of concentration on, spousal relationship and kids as they grew up and that sort of thing. And now that I'm in my 50s, I'm starting to get curious.
You know what, Ter? This has been fantastic. I've just forgotten how much I miss you.
It has been nice to catch up. Yeah. I know it's been a lot of talk about me, and I didn't hear much about you. But I think it's great. Listening to your podcast with Fred really it made me think of, I haven't talked to Matt in a long time. So.
The Sound Off Podcast with Matt Kundel.
And that's the podcast for this week. The show has been brought to you by OvernightRadio.com, delivering high-end commercials for stations and companies at budget-friendly rates. Also by MattKundelVoice.ca. Quotes delivered in hours for narrations, videos, imaging for radio stations, podcasts, and more.
The Sound Off Podcast was produced by Evan Serminski and recorded in the master studio of MattKundelVoice.com. Please rate and review episodes. It will help others find the show. To advertise on the podcast, email soundoff@mattkundel.com or download a rate card from the website, and follow us and like us wherever great social media content is shared.
Hey, how are you? Oh, did I press? How's this? How's that now?
I'm good.
Do you actually see me?
I see a picture of you.
Oh. You did the video. I didn't do video.
Oh, well.
That's not nice.
What are you wearing?
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the host of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com
and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.